Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Attention, collectors of vinyl, have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
My name is Frank Silvestri. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, not a Canadian. And Philly's really close to New Jersey, by the way. And I'm here to talk to you about why I am a Patreon supporter of Vish Khanna's Creative Control podcast, the unique long-form exploration of music, comedy, art, geography, and so much more. Vish is an incredible interviewer who has a charming, disarming, funny, reverently irreverent style, which feels a lot more like a conversation with friends than a podcast interview. These conversations have included talking to people like Jeff Tweedy, Nels Klein, Ira Kaplan, Dan Romano, Carson McCone, the White Hot Lung, Juliana Riolino, and one of my all-time favorites, the Sadies. So if you're like me and you find these kind of conversations vital, essential, and important, I hope you'll join me in supporting Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Matt Corvette is a punk rock songwriter and singer based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Since 2004, Corvette has been the lead singer and lyricist in the mighty and uncompromising rock band Piss Jeans, who have released 6 albums and 3 EPs over the past 20 years. The latest Piss Jeans record is their first in 7 years and was released by Sub Pop Records on March 1st, 2024. It's called Half Divorced, and it prompted Matt and I to have a talk about things like life in Philly, Kurt Vile, and Adam and his package, writing angry, funny songs as and even for adults, the band's long break between albums, having fun playing music like Mudhoney does, hating our phones, observing helicopter parents, and what kids get up to these days. Covering a Pink Lincoln song and how everywhere is bad, touring again, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners just like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for podcasters like me to make a living. In fact, as I'm speaking to you, it's the only way I'm making a living is this show. So if you like the show and, you know, want to be like some of your fellow listeners, please support me financially at patreon.com/creativecontrol, because maybe you need the show. Maybe the world needs the show. Sometimes I don't know. I like to think that it's a good show. Anyway, now I'm over and pathetically upselling my own show. If you can support the show, if you have the means, today would be a great day to do it. Patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you so much. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful record store with bricks and mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and a great website, blackbird.ca, where you can see what they have in stock, and you can also order records, and they can get the, you can get them shipped right to your house. Say you want the new Piss Jeans album, Half Divorced. Go to blackbird.ca, type it in the search thing, see if they can send it to you. I bet they can. Thanks to Blackbird. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. All fine independent businesses, by the way. This is episode 844 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Matt Corvette of Piss Jeans, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Matt, how's it going?
Good, good. How are you doing?
I'm well. It's nice to see you, and actually, as I think on it, talk to you again. We spoke once before back in the day about Piss Jeans when I was working for a big company, and now I'm on my own. So it's nice to talk to you this way, and glad you're back with your band.
Yeah,
before we get too much further, where in the world are you today?
I'm at home in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Ah, nice Philly. I have a lot of guests from Philly, it seems, these days. And
it's a good music town.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Relatively easy to live here and like have places to play. There's just tons of venues from, you know, basements to large, you know, kind of sub arena type places. And you can't, none of these places are run by total jerks. You know what I mean? Like, basements are well run and organized, and same with the largest clubs. So, pretty good spot here, I think. We got it pretty easy.
Still a lot of church shows in Philly?
At one particular church, yeah, the Unitarian Church.
Yeah.
That's been, you know, like a linchpin of the DIY scene, I guess, since I have been in high school.
Yeah, the last time I was in Philly, it must have been many years ago now, but I was road managing a band, and yeah, we played there at that place. And yeah, I have fond memories of Philly. I've told this story before. I had, do you know Kurt Vile?
Yes, yeah, of course.
Yeah, do you know him personally? Have you come across him?
I do. I actually had the pleasure of acting in one of his music videos, the one that was about like parking. I forget the song exactly, the title, but I was thrilled to be like a parking enforcement agent alongside Kevin Corrigan.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was super fun and cool. Yeah, he's a real character. I love him. I wish I could hang out with him more often, but he's, you know, got his hands full.
Yeah, he was just on the show a couple months ago and we had a good chat, and I brought up Adam and his package. I mean, we talked about the Dead Milkmen, maybe obviously, but he knew of Adam and his package. You ever come across Adam and his package?
Of course, yeah. I mean, that's, how do you explain Adam and his package to someone who's like under 35? You know, I don't think it wouldn't make sense. But my first encounter with Adam and his package was actually at a West Philly squat venue called Stalag 13. I went to see Spaz and Brutal Truth and His Hero Is Gone.
Oh, nice.
And lo and behold, oh, I was thrilled. I was 17, maybe verging on 18. Just kind of got a ride from some older guys in town, like didn't really tell my parents and just kind of winged it. And it was completely stuffed with people. Everyone was super psyched. And then this guy just started playing his like little songs from like a karaoke machine in the corner. And I mean, I didn't have like any awareness of that you could do this, you know, like I was still so young and green and I didn't grasp what was happening, I guess. But I thought it was cool, you know, just to be that confident, you know, in a scene that's not catering to what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I talked about him on that episode with Kurt Vile, somebody reached out to me and it just came in the mail. I guess Adam from Adam and His Package is in a new band. And I was sent the vinyl record and I have to listen to it. I haven't had a chance yet. So I don't know. It might come full circle. And by the way, the reason I knew Adam and His Package, there are a couple of reasons, but one of them was in 1998 or 1999, my band at the time played a show with him in our living room in Guelph, Ontario, where I lived at the time.
Oh, perfect.
And then I was road managing another band in the fall of 2000, and we get to Philly, and I said whimsically, I wonder if we'll run into Adam and His Package. I go to a record store. Who's in there? Adam and His Package. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Very, very strange. So I find it all very weird. Anyway, it's nice to have you back on the show. Or rather, it's nice to have you on the show for the first time. It's nice to talk to you again. And it's nice to hear about Philly and all sorts of things.
Same old, same. I mean, nothing hasn't gotten significantly worse or anything. So rest assured, you're welcome back anytime.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. And, you know, dollars to donuts, I'm going to run into Adam and His Package. That's just the way it works for me. It's
you know, now I want to run into Adam. You know, I guess there's the package is probably elsewhere, but
yes.
Adam, I at least hope to run into and, you know, just to offer my appreciation.
I'm sincere. I can't wait to put this record on my record player and actually figure out what it is and then try to figure out if I can reconnect with Adam on the show. What a magical world it is that you can do that. But
There was actually, before I go, we leave this important topic of Adam and His Package, I do want to say there was a very like one-off Adam and His Rockage 7-inch that came out in the late 90s that was like him with a band.
Oh.
And it ruled. It was like him with a band covering Adam and His Package songs. And you should check it out. If you're, you know, it kind of was like, ooh, he should have done this instead, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
But of course, part of the charm was just the novelty of what he was doing. But
yeah, as I told Kurt, what stuck out for me is he had a song at the time called Sting Cannot Possibly Be the Same Guy Who Was in the Police, which we just all thought was amazing. What an amazing turn of phrase. And so, I'm going to, if he's on the show, I got to do my research and maybe track down that 7-inch and all that. I gotta get right into it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's accessible in the world of Discogs for cheap, you know.
Yeah, and I think some of it is on YouTube, actually. Whatever, you know, how people just upload whole records and you.
Right.
Yeah, obscure things. So, speaking of cool records, congratulations on this new one by Piss Jeans. It's amazing. I really enjoy it.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, it's been a while since you guys put out a record. 7 years, is that right?
Yeah, I mean. Time flies.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like it, but yeah, it's been 7 years.
And I gather from even the title, Half Divorced. I mean, it's called Half Divorced. Does life get in the way of being in a band? Has it been for you?
I guess in the way that bands are visible now, I feel like it's gotten in the way of us being visible, maybe, because we're not like actively or we haven't been like producing much content, maybe,
sure.
You know, in like a world where we kind of need content.
Right.
Because we're always playing shows on some kind of moderate within driving distance of our homes sort of situation, which being in Philadelphia, that's pretty easy to, you know, go down to Richmond, go up to Boston, go out to Chicago. So we've been on that like kind of comfort circuit for many years. And, we just needed to get a new record out. I think during COVID, we didn't do anything as a band. We just kind of had these sad little Zoom calls where we just looked at each other's like chins from like the downward angle, you know, and just kind of sat in our illuminating our faces with our phone lights.
Yeah.
And once we all got the shot, it was like exciting to get back together and really try to like put together a record.
Yeah.
I think suddenly time felt precious compared to before when we weren't feeling the push, you know?
Yeah. From what I can tell, it's a pretty personal collection of lyrics, but I also pick up on some universality. You've gone through some, and you and your bandmates, I gather, gone through some life changes, adult life changes. Is that a way to put it? Like having families? Yeah,
definitely not teenager life changes. You know, this is not a record. You know how like you have to put a sticker on records, like a Gigi Allen being like not for sale for persons. I wanted to like do the opposite, you know, not for sale for persons under the age of like 30, you know, like just it's not for you. Go listen to something else. You know,
it's rare to hear a pop hardcore but pop punk style song about being $62,000 in debt. Those are, I mean, ideally those are adult concerns. I guess they could be a recent school graduate concerns as well. But yeah, no, it seems like a record for adults is what you're saying. Adults will relate to this.
Yeah. I mean, well, I feel like I'm always trying to write about my specific reality. So it follows that naturally I'm going to be writing about, you know, the things that I'm encountering at whatever age I am, you know, like we're not frozen adolescents, nor are we trying to pretend that we like know it all and, you know, our old souls. So I think Piss Jeans is always reactive to the circumstances around us. And I'm hoping that that can lend to some universality, you know. Oh, man, I think I butchered that, but
the word,
you know, just that
universality is universally regarded as a hard to say word. So don't worry about that.
Okay. Thank you. You know, like if I'm specific, that can ground it in a specific place and time. But hopefully the sentiment behind it, if it's like nervousness or anxiety or anger or, you know, disbelief or frustration, that those can be connected with, I guess, even if you're like a really cool teenager only.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You invoke time there. Can you talk a little bit about when these songs were actually written? Now, I gather from your reference to the pandemic and prior to the availability of vaccines that the band didn't convene. So I assume there wasn't a lot of jamming. But are any of these? So I have two questions. I can deduce that maybe most of the music has been written in recent times. But I'm curious about the lyrics, too. Are they all from the same batch of activity, or were you working on these prior to, let's say, the pandemic or any other reason?
Sure.
Again, seven-year gap between records. I guess I just wonder, is your mind churning? Are you writing down lyrics? How is this working? Yeah.
Yeah, musically, we had a couple ideas that were pre-COVID that made it to the album. Songs that were fully finished and we had for a while. There's maybe like one or two of those. And then at least one that we rediscovered while kind of just going through what we had been working on previously. Lyrically, that's like the last thing I do.
Oh, okay.
The way I go about it is I'm more trying to find a concept or like a song title that strikes me as like something that's worth sharing. And I'll just kind of keep a running list, you know, on my phone, my notes app. And it's a great way to kind of sift through trash because a lot of my ideas are terrible, you know, and then I can just revisit them and then delete them, you know, no harm, no foul. And then hopefully if something's sticking with me after, you know, a few weeks or I feel like this is something I really want to kind of go into, then when we're writing the music, I wait until we find a song that feels like it has the right vibe to match that,
yeah,
you know, energy or sentiment, or like goes completely against that sentiment. That can be like an interesting way to deliver, you know, a lyrics. But as far as actually sitting down and like crafting the words I say, That was done about a year ago. Just in the studio, which is like a great place. While my bandmates are like hard at work tracking their instruments, I can just kind of, you know, scuttle off to a small dark corner and do nothing but work on the lyrics and get them all finalized.
I see.
After like it brews in my head for, you know, months or even years in some cases.
So you reference the fact that on some occasions you'll write something down and you'll throw it in the trash.
For sure.
So I'm curious that the classification of it as trash, does that come from your own, I don't like this, I'm getting rid of it? Or do you bring it to someone else, a partner, or your bandmates, and be like, hey, I got an idea. Does anyone else determine what's trash?
I mean, they could, but I'm pretty severe.
Okay.
You know, like, I think we're all our own harshest critics in a lot of ways. And I never want to be, like, corny or typical or, like, you know, obvious or, like, saying the thing that other people are saying more eloquently or sharper. So often, like, I'll have an idea right before bed and just kind of, you know, half smirk and jot it down thinking, all right, here we go. And then the next morning I can wake up and look at it and be like, I'm just so glad this is a private document, you know, because this is hackneyed or lame, you know. But like, that's how it goes, right? You got to churn a lot of stuff out there and then see what sticks.
Yeah,
at least that's how it works for me.
Yeah, I was reading a tweet thread or something by the comedian and late night. She's a comedian, Lori Kilmartin. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she's known for writing on Conan O'Brien's talk shows. And she was talking to someone, maybe it was a tweet. There was a recent one of these award shows, and the comedian bombed, just horrible. Like, he did a terrible job, and he revealed, I think, that he'd only gotten the gig a week before. And she was talking about how, you know, for Conan to tell 6 jokes, she would write 60 jokes.
Oh, I believe it.
Like,
yeah.
Just the whittling down process. And I think that surprised some. 60 jokes and he's using 6? That's bananas. Like, how do you even do that? So I'm not saying it's the same thing, but you're alluding to that. You will write more than you use.
Yeah, I mean, if we were, and this also kind of plays into the fact that we haven't done an album in 7 years.
Yeah.
Like, the most important thing to us is that we feel like we've given our best, that we've like shared stuff that we're fully proud of, that we're not like a full-time band as career where, hey, we need to give you more music every 2 years, you know, so we have a touring cycle and such.
Yeah.
I mean, there's music. We've written songs that didn't end up anywhere because we'll try something out and we'll say, this sounds like a band trying to sound like Piss Jeans, you know?
Right.
And then it's like, that's not, you know, like, that's not what we want to do. This sounds like some, you know, AI-generated Piss Jeans or something.
Yeah.
And so we just dump it, you know?
Yeah. I feel like when the band sort of emerged, or maybe first started to get attention with Sub Pop, there were a lot of, like, comparisons that were made about who your band might sound like and blah, blah, blah. But I feel like you have your own voice. Are you feeling objectively like your band has its own voice at this point?
Oh, I mean, I sure hope so. That's like one of the most important things, is to try to feel like what we're doing is special, or like that we're not just doing another thing that you can get from someone else.
Yeah.
I mean, in a lot of ways, it's still 4 dudes playing rock music with distortion pedals. So we're certainly not like inventing a new language or anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I it would be important for me to feel like we're not just watching Jesus Lizard videos and then being like, yeah, let's just try that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's you invoke the band that I think often you were kind of saddled with comparisons. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is funny because, truth be told, they weren't on my radar.
Yes.
In those they became on my radar because of the comparisons. And I like, actually, you remember like Netflix when you do DVDs?
Yeah.
I like Netflix DVD rented a live Jesus Lizard, whatever they had.
Yeah.
And I watched it and I thought, yeah, I see what people are saying.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't entire. I'm not going to pretend like it was totally unfounded.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because I feel like maybe you know, they were coming from, hey, we really like punk and hardcore, but we really don't like certain aspects of that.
Yeah.
And there's certain things we want to try out. And that was kind of our intention early on was, you know, we're definitely in love with punk and hardcore, but we wanted to slow it down or like bend the form or be rude to, you know, the tradition of it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I'm sure that the same could be said for them.
Well,
you know,
among the
15 years before us.
Yeah. And among the distinctions for that band, and there are many, for some of us, they are one of the greatest four dudes playing rock music bands of all time and very much still kind of cast a shadow over post-hardcore, whatever, rock, underground rock music. But one of the things I think that really distinguishes them is David Yao and sort of the profane humor that they conveyed within the kind of anger. This record is funny as fuck. Like, I enjoy the jokes and I enjoy... My God, my wife loves Everywhere is Bad. We all...
Yeah, I'm proud of that one. I saw a review today that was like, this is great, except for Everywhere is Bad. And like, I wasn't even mad at it. I'm like, come on, man, it's fun.
That is fun. You know? And I think that notion of fun pervades this album. Although, when I hear you sing, Matt, I'm like, that sounds painful. Like, that sounds like a guy who must be a bit sore after singing these sort of angry songs, but they're also really fun. Can you talk about that fusion you seem to be drawn to of
humor? Yeah, I mean, I guess one thing that I'm trying to bring to light now or spotlight that seems kind of lost in the sauce for me as far as like bands existing today is just that being in a band is super fun when it's your friends and you're playing music together. Like, that is the reward, you know? Because I see so many bands, like, we're all clawing at each other for, like, 10 more likes or, like, a better Spotify ranking out. And it's, like, so gross and so far removed from why did you pick up a guitar in the first place? It's because you saw, like, a Minor Threat video or because, you know, Fiona Apple seemed crazy and you wanted to do that too. Like, that's why, like, there's magic, and I'm trying to, like, stay in the magic zone for myself, for my own, like, enjoyment of just appreciating my bandmates and what we get to do, because the rest of the day, you're working, like, you're on your phone miserable. Like, life really feels shittier than ever, so, like, let's get back to basics and get into the fact that music is just so much fun, and you can just enjoy it, you know? Like, I feel like we've encountered through the years, been lucky enough to have, like, kind of a relationship with Mudhoney.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we've played shows with them.
Yeah.
And to me, those guys really, like, show you that having fun in the band, that's the thing that matters.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're not out here trying to be a part of the Spotify conversation. They're not, you know, doing a new viral thing. Like, they're just literally having fun and have been for, like, 40 years, you know? And that's my goal. I want to just keep making things I'm proud of and having, like, fun along the way. Like, Everywhere is Bad, but we had so much fun with that one. You know, it's ridiculous, but there's also a seriousness behind it, you know?
Yeah, and there's gang vocals. Like, I mean, it sounds like everybody in the band has it's like a call and response thing. It's really funny.
For sure.
I think the perspective you're talking about might be a generation of musicians who are looking at how to exist in the current landscape and thinking, how did bands survive being just bands? Whereas when you talk about Mudhoney, and I think of Mark Arm, who I've talked to a few times and has been on this show a few times, often when I connect with Mark, he's at work. He's taking a little break from his day job. And then we talk about stuff and the records and everything, and he's going to go out on tour for a month or two if it works out. Back to his day job. That shift in perspective, I think, is important. Like, you, I don't know your situation. Sorry, Matt, do you have a job as well as being in?
Yeah. I hopped off my day job to do this as well.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's a perspective, right? You relish being in the band because it's the escape from reality, probably. And I think what you're sensing is a tension between people who are like, I just want the creative thing to be my all the time reality. but it's very few and far between that people get to do that as much. Does what I'm saying resonate, do you think?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I also don't want, you know, I want to acknowledge my like privilege as someone who started working before like 2017 or something. I feel like the employment landscape has gotten so terrible with what things cost now. Like, so I don't, if someone really wants to get paid for every second of time they put into their band, I can understand that now more than ever.
Yeah.
You know, because we're all like struggling except for like the very minuscule fraction who's like completely wealthy.
Yeah.
If you're going to put a tip jar on your merch table, I have nothing against that. You know, like, please go for it. Like, pursue it as hard as you want, versus if you did that in 1996, I'd be like, the fuck is this? You know, like, get out of here, man. What are you doing? You know, like, you trying to be banned from ever playing a show again, you know? But like, I feel like life was more stable in 1996. You know, you could work as a barista and like still go out every night and not be wondering how you're so in debt.
Yeah.
And so I have a sympathy for young people who really have like see no positive future ahead. You know, it's like the world is boiling and there are no jobs that pay a living wage.
Yeah.
So I get that, but also try to have some fun, you know, like, you don't have to live inside your like Spotify metric head where you're competing in that way, unless you really want to.
But that's, I think that's part of it though. Like, you're talking about the younger people who have to think about, do they have to do it? I don't know if they have to do it. They are thinking about the Spotify. They're thinking about the metrics, because every musician who's young feels like it's commonplace to make it a job. So you've got the expression part that we used to have when we were making music, or when you were making music when you were younger, and I was too. You just played the music. And if you were lucky, a label would say, we'll take care of everything else. You make the music, and we'll say if we like it or not. And then we'll put it out for you, and we'll work on all the marketing, and we'll do all this shit. Part of the resentment is, oh, shit. So I'm a musician. I got to now worry about YouTube and Spotify and all the Instagram. That's, I think, the tension. Is like, yes, the material conditions have changed, the labor, you know, inflation, all these things. That's all true. But I think younger people are asked to do a lot more for little, like, the fun is gone. The fun part of it is sort of, you're distracted by all the other shit you have to do. Does that make sense? I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. And I feel like, I mean, there's just such a saturation of music now too, because it's so easy to just record, you know, and have it sound decent.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to find the one studio in town who has an 8-track and pay some, you know, jerk who only listens to classic rock to try to get a sound for you guys. But the flip side is there's Bandcamp, right?
Yeah.
And you put out your EP that sounds pretty good on Bandcamp, and you're competing with 2 million other new releases that came out that day on Bandcamp, and it just seems harder to get noticed.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess my advice would be, like, build a community around you. Like, make friends with people, you know, like, hang out in the places you want to be known, like, go to shows, actually talk to people in person. There's not like a shortcut, you know, you can't just, there's like that fluke, you know, if you write the one song that blows up on TikTok or something. But I feel like the answer is you have to kind of work slowly and develop friends over time if you want to get, like, noticed.
Yeah.
You know, there's not that immediate gratification that we get in a selfie, you know?
Yeah. Hey, thanks for listening to Creative Control, as always. As you may have heard me mention, I recently lost my day job, and I've had a few conversations with people since who've said, you had a day job? I thought your podcast was your day job. When I explained why it hasn't been my day job to a friend, he suggested I should share some of this information with people like you listening right now. So, in short, unless they have some giant exclusive $1 million contract, podcasters are not paid to make stuff by companies like Apple and Spotify. Podcasters do not make any money from streaming royalties. Ad revenue is dependent on a certain threshold of downloads each month, and even if your show is accessed 30,000 times a month, the income you get is actually really minimal. So podcasters like me usually make time in our lives to support our communities and our interests to make these shows, and our most reliable source of income for this work is, in fact, crowdfunding. In my case, it's my Patreon. So if you'd like to receive ad-free episodes earlier than everyone else, regular newsletters and blog posts, bonus audio content, and support my work, quite literally, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And I feel like some of these sentiments are pervading your lyrics on this record, like the contemporary stuff. You said you really started writing these songs really about a year ago. Can you talk about maybe the contemporary resonances that you feel, like the stuff we're kind of talking about, the universal experiences that maybe have inspired some of these songs? I pick up on some. And again, it's a real mix of humor and anger. I don't want to suggest it's not an angry record. It's not all jokes. Everywhere is Bad is a perfect sardonic blend of like, everywhere is kind of bad, but it's also something you can kind of laugh about. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the sentiment behind that was kind of like, anything is terrible, but there's a comfort in that, you know? Yeah. Like that you're someone can find a reason why your choice was wrong in where you want to live, let's say.
Yeah.
But so you can do that about anywhere,
yes.
You know, like yeah. It's kind of, and like, you know, there's a comfort in the communal feeling that everything sucks, you know, in that one.
I can relate. I'm from Ontario originally, and that's where I was, you know, lived and was born and raised and all that kind of stuff. But the government, like we have, like you guys have states, you know, and you have like a conservative senator, congressman, you're like, ah, this sucks. Anyway, we moved to a worse province, I guess, to Alberta in terms of the politics. And now when we look around our country, like there's nowhere good. That's our feeling right now.
It's yeah,
like,
right?
It's really complicated. So your song, I think, resonated with us because like, what,
good.
You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of people will relate to it. But yeah, you wrote most of these songs, I guess, since a pandemic has started. And you've seen human behavior as it's dealing with this, and there's a lot of pseudo-intellectualism, all sorts of things are going on. Is there, in a general overarching sense, would you say that this period we've all been living through has informed some of your lyrics on this record?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like often what I'm trying to do is interrogate my own behavior and, like, you know, reactions to things, because that feels like a very worthy target for me. You know, I don't want to just be like, pick some random guy and go to town for the most part, because I don't know, like, let me hold myself accountable.
Yeah.
You know, that feels like more difficult and also more rewarding ultimately.
Yeah.
I'm like on my phone all the time and I hate it, you know, and I feel like that's a big part of where my mindset comes from, is like, you know, I can't name the giant tree outside of my house, but I'm here clicking colorful squares to earn points, you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
How did I end up here? You know, like feeling zero satisfaction, too, from playing these stupid games or, you know, scrolling. I mean, obviously, we all know, like, you know, the doom scrolling, but I feel like it really is insidious in that we derive no pleasure from it, but we're doing it all the time, like, by our own free will. And I kind of want to snap out of that. You know, that's what I'm feeling.
They call it doom scrolling because apparently people who do it are looking for bad news. But I think when you're doom scrolling or playing your word games or whatever it is you're alluding to, you're staving off dread. Even if you're looking at bad news, I don't know. That's, I guess, whatever. That's confirmation bias, I guess, is what you're talking about or what I'm talking about. But that seems to be a thing. Everyone's lost in their phones because they want to literally avoid everything around them and their phone.
But the phones are so savvy. Yeah. You know, like they know how to grab us. You know, like for the way my brain is wired, I hate when there's a box, like an icon, and a little red number in the upper right corner, like warning me of a thing I need to tend to.
Oh, right.
Like stuff like that is so insidious. You know, it's like, how did you know I'm going to feel compelled to fix whatever this red thing, you know, like if there's a new text. And I just am so furious at my own, like, chemistry that, like, I can't just beat that. And I feel like that's kind of, if anything, the song that kind of tackles that the most is definitely Junk Time.
Yes.
You know, the word itself being, like, a word used to explain the time we're spent idling on our phones. You know, like, nothing is produced, nothing is gained. It was not even like watching a TV show. That wouldn't count as junk time, you know?
Is that an actual – I never encountered that term before, but I understood what it meant. And I actually wondered if it was like something that people said in an office when someone is taking a break from their work or something like that.
I mean, that sounds pretty dystopian probably. No, I encountered it somewhere. I couldn't tell. I mean, all I can claim is that I didn't create it, that specific phrase, you know.
Yeah. So are you also, Matt, are you a parent?
I am, yeah.
So you were just talking about how sometimes you're writing songs that seem to be about other people, but they might be about yourself. And I don't know why, but I thought of, and I'm not accusing you of anything. This is not meant to disparage you personally, but Helicopter Parent came to mind because I worry. I'll tell you two things. Sometimes I worry I'm being a helicopter parent.
And oh, you're a parent as well?
Yeah, I got two of them.
Okay.
I own two children. One is 12 and one is 9, and I have to go pick one of them up, actually. I got him a phone this Christmas. So I can text him things. He was using an iPod with no data plan. So now we have this, and it's actually helpful. It's like minus 30 degrees here in Edmonton. Damn. It's very cold, Celsius, sorry. And anyway, where was I going with this? Yeah, I wondered about what you were saying in that song. And then I also thought, did Matt write a song about me? I'm a little worried that this song might be about me. I don't think I am, but you never know.
That's fun.
You know what I'm saying? Is a song like where did a song like that one get? What inspired that song? Was it something you saw or something you saw in yourself?
Yeah, I mean, like, well, certainly, you know, I'm yelling at myself to not be a helicopter parent, but also yelling at other people just because why not? You know, let's have a big fuss. I mean, yeah, I just feel like I'll preface this by saying I didn't really care about kids at all until I had one, you know, like it wasn't, I didn't grow up as like a big brother of six children, you know, who were much younger than me. I don't think I'm really an uncle to anyone, you know, by blood, certainly not. Yeah. So it wasn't anything on my radar, but once I became a parent, I like wanted to do a good job and kind of didn't want to just like coast on what I thought, like, oh, I turned out okay, so yeah, we'll just do you the Matt Corvette way, you know what I mean? Like, I actually like tried to learn and like educate myself, and in doing so I feel like I learned that kids are just like treated like crap all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like they're given like no responsibility or, you know, self ability to just go out and, you know, we don't trust them the way like my generation was trusted to just go outside. And I'm sure there's like, I'm sure that comes from a good place, a place of like protection and love. But I feel like we need to reassess what the hell we're doing, you know, and just trust that our children are capable, because then they will be, you know, like where if you keep them on a leash, they're going to live up to that leash, you know.
100%. Talk 100% parenting. Though. I do think, because my wife will say this every once in a while, when I was younger, I did this. And I'm like, yeah, but there weren't phones and computers and video games. Like when I played a video game as a kid, you'd play for like, I don't know, you might play for a long time, but it wasn't the only thing you did. And you couldn't, if you were in your house and your friends weren't there, it was just you and the video game. My son,
right.
He's like, we moved here from Ontario 4 years ago, and he immediately, and then the pandemic started. So there was just this universal, like, we will connect remotely. And if it wasn't for that, I don't think he would still be communicating with his friends in Ontario the way he is now. And he's bringing people together, and they play video games and they watch movies using the internet. You can't compare it's this wild. Technological time to what we had growing up. But at the same time, yeah, you want them to go outside and have fun and all these sorts of things. I'm just saying, I think comparing our experience, because you said something like we had more freedom, maybe. I think you didn't say that word exactly, but I went out and
felt
did stuff.
Like it.
Yeah. But maybe the landscape has changed for that too. Like everywhere we go in the world, there's some sign that says basically, kids, don't hang out here. You don't skateboard here.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. The culture is like anti-child.
Yes.
You know, like there's a mall in Philadelphia that just made it. You have to have an adult guardian if you're under 16. Like you know, we're telling our children there's no place for them to go.
Yeah.
At least, you know, in my direct American Philadelphian experience, it's like parks close at dark and don't be a bother. Like, by the way, like the environment here, the air pollution is so bad. We're just saying like stay inside and get your lesson on a screen, you know, like and – it's just breeding like resentment and anger. And like, I know how I feel when I'm on the internet, you feel like you can just be a bigger jerk, you know, like there's less accountability. And I worry about that, I guess, that we're not like, it's not breeding kindness, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So as I've discovered with a few of my guests lately, when I delve into some of their songs that seem personal, I think they're talking a lot about power structures, and I feel a bit of that in your, like you're, I feel like you're self-examining and you're wondering why you're the way you are, and you say you're addicted to your phone and you don't like it, but you're still doing it, right? So you're not
sure.
Absolving yourself from the situation you're in, but when I talk about the anger, is there a particular place it's directed beyond, sorry to say this, beyond yourself? Do you feel like there's anger that you're directing at any particular power structure or force?
I mean, probably, you know, like most things, I feel like it would come down to capitalism in general. If we want to like really take a wide lens, you know, the way that we're all working stupid jobs, you know, for little money while, you know, medical corporations. I mean, this is nothing new. I'm sure I'm not having any grand revelations here, but it just echoes with me all the time. Like, why are we doing this? Like, you know, why am I being billed this for a dental checkup?
Yeah.
Why, you know, all the things that like, why am I working extra hard so that I can take 2 days off, you know?
Yeah.
Just all those feelings, it all comes down to the stupid way our society is structured that we're all like seem to be begrudgingly accepting because so much of the media coming to us, you know, doesn't even remotely offer any other secondary choice, you know, it's like pounded into our heads that this is the only reality that could ever exist.
Yeah.
And it's hard to fight that thought, you know, even if you're a person who's thinking all the time and, you know, critiquing life, it's hard to take on as one person, you know, so you have to find community with people you do like and, you know, chip away at it, I guess. I don't know.
We tend to, process cognitive dissonance and deal with it. I think some of us do anyway, with humor, satire. There's satire on your record as well. Can you talk a little bit more about the role of humor in your life to deal with the same shit you've just been talking about? Does it help you?
Well, I mean, I feel like myself and my bandmates in Piss Jeans, it's just how we engage. You know, I feel like it's just the truest way if you were hanging out with us or like, you know, it's the natural language that we communicate in, which is you know, being silly or, you know, trying to make someone else amused is a big part of how our natural personalities always have been for as long as I've known these guys. Yeah. So that's definitely how I'm going to write. I would feel like such a phony if I was going to come to you with a dark, brooding, dead serious, you know, like black eyeliner stare where I'm just, you know, furious and that's it. Like, that would not be true to myself at all, nor would wild metaphor that's completely you can't unravel it, where, you know, what I'm even saying, that would also feel untrue to myself, you know.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to like give you the most authentic version of me while also hopefully being entertaining.
Yeah.
And engaging.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what we all should do as artists or musicians, right? Just figure out what makes you special and then just try to dig deepest into that.
I wonder if you feel like this is a particularly self-reflective batch of songs. I feel like you just alluded to the fact that it might be. One of the songs on this record is actually a cover called Monsters. And it's a song that I think is about an awakening an adult has about lies they were told as a kid. And so I wonder if that's a tone setter for you lyrically in any particular way about you just being like, why am I like this? Or why was I told this? Like, are you feeling that way?
Well, it's an epiphany in that song for sure that like, wow, you know, the way people behave, that's like truly what we have to look out for and, you know, be aware of. But even more, the significance of that is that I'm kind of talking. I'm not talking to. I'm mostly showing off for my teenage self to be like, yo, look at me, 15-year-old Matt, who's playing this pink Lincoln 7-inch in his bedroom while playing Mario Kart on mute by himself. Years from now, you'll be on Sub Pop Records getting to like just cover the song because it was a whim of yours and kicking ass at it and putting it out for people to hear. Like, how lucky am I? Like, it's a celebration of like,
yeah,
hey, I turned out in a way that would really impress who I used to be. Like, I followed the same path I feel like I've been on, and I'm loving it. I'm happy, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's great to be punk. It's great to be loud. Like, I'm not, my tastes haven't changed. If I've hopefully matured as a person, but without losing, you know, the lifeblood that I've always kind of had inside me, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to become like stuffy and out of touch. And so it's almost just like a response to my old self.
It seems completely joyous, if I may say. Like, it does sound like you're having a lot of fun and dealing with like hard things in some cases. But I will say, like, the joy is, it's kind of contagious. Like, I enjoy listening to this record, even though it's, you know, a lot of screaming and yelling and clattering.
Right.
So I think
that's great. Oh,
yeah.
I'm so glad to hear it.
Yeah. So in terms of the sound of the band, sorry, Matt, you're the singer and it sounds you deal with the lyrics. Do you have any, do you play any instruments yourself?
Nothing beyond, you know, beginner level. I mean, I played bass in bands before, but really it was just, a means to hang out with my friends.
Okay.
You know?
So you're not coming into the practice space with these guys saying, I got an idea.
I bring zero riffs, generally speaking, but Everywhere Is Bad was like the one musical idea where it was what I brought,
okay.
You know, just by literally just talking about what I want. I mean, I feel like every song we have, all of us offer input, and that's what makes it so satisfying is that, and when I say input, I mean, you know, Brad, who plays guitar, might have a drum pattern in mind, or Sean might have, who plays drums, might have like a sound or like a sense for the atmosphere. And that's like the beauty of creating with these other people and like not having a solo project is that we end up in a point that's different from where any of us would have gotten on our own.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I know it sounds like you weren't inactive during this 7-year gap between records, although it sounds like the beginning of the pandemic slowed you down. Is there anything about the sound of this band and what your colleagues bring to the table now Is there anything about it that surprises you, or anything that you're like, holy shit, like you're particularly proud of on this record compared to maybe from where you guys started kind of thing? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's such good players who really interact super well with each other. And one thing that I was hoping to do with this record is put out a bunch of songs that we would want to play live. That would be fun to like produce in front of an audience that they would connect with, you know? So that means no 12-minute doom epic, no like noise piece, you know, just like stuff that's like fun and connects with someone who may have never heard us before.
Yeah.
And in doing that, I mean, as like a terrible musician myself, I can see these other guys who are very skilled. And I know that when you're a skilled musician, the pitfall is wanting to like challenge yourself with complicated patterns or like signatures, all the stuff that like listeners don't want to hear.
Yeah.
Musicians are just drawn to,
yeah, you know, that's true.
Like,
yeah.
You can see it in any band's discography as they're like on album 7, they're often like La La Land with themselves. And it's like, I'm trying to bring it to a point where like it's simple, and everyone else was completely on board with this and, you know, feeling it too. And that was part of the challenge, was writing songs that hopefully, you know, any one of these songs on this record, a 10th grader could cover on YouTube. You know what I mean? But in our playing them, hopefully there's the style comes through,
yeah,
the personality, like the things that can't just be copied necessarily can be showcased, you know,
yeah,
rather than just like dazzling arpeggios or something.
One anomaly on the record, and it's for me, it's weird. It ends the record, but it's sort of like this weird centerpiece, which is Moving On. And for me, it actually reminds me a bit of a band called Fucked Up, which I like,
sure,
and I'm friendly with. I'm just curious, are you you and the band, do you feel like you have contemporary favorites? Like, are you currently listening to music that inspires you in any way?
I mean, most of the stuff that inspires me to include in Piss Jeans, I feel like is old random bits and pieces.
Okay.
You know, like, yeah, like I'll be thinking for, let's say, Anti-Sapio, I'll be like, I kind of want some like 7 second style backing vocals on,
yeah,
this part or something. Or, I mean, so many times we've gone to the well with like Flipper and been like, you know, what would they do? Or even, you know, Danzig or Stickmen with Ray Guns, who are kind of a more obscure Texas unit. Like, we kind of go to a lot of things for particular music inspiration, but we definitely have contemporaries of people who just, like, Fucked Up is a great example because they started maybe a couple years before us,
yeah,
but they've never broken up,
yeah,
and they come from like the exact same hardcore background as kids as we do, and they've kind of done their own thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like, yeah, we get along great with them the random times we encounter each other. You know, I admire them, but definitely not like any sort of musical inspiration,
yeah, yeah,
so much,
no,
as like a kinship,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I just wondered if you, with your schedule, have time to kind of keep... I don't know, I find that I talk to people and no one... There's been this thread of people saying, particularly former music journalists I know, saying, I didn't listen to any new music this year. Because they left, and I think they've resented.
Right.
The music is in a weird place, and for,
yeah,
some of us,
yeah,
like, you can't have a career doing it anymore. So you kind of grow to resent the thing you believed in because it let you down. So I'm not saying this about you in any way, but it is coming to mind. Like, are the people I'm talking to, and are my fellow podcasters and music journalists actually still feeling inspired enough to listen to new music? That's all. I just was curious if.
They should, right? I mean,
yeah,
I listen to so much new music just for my own personal enjoyment, for sure.
Yeah.
I hope to never be that person who's just like, you know, stopping time at a certain age, being like, okay, I'm 38 and new music ends now.
Yeah.
You know, like, that doesn't seem like it, I just love it too much, you,
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like my favorite thing to spend time thinking about, listening to, putting energy into, even if it's other people's music. It's always been my main passion since I was in like second grade, you know?
Well, it comes across. I was watching the videos for the a couple of the singles. I think as we're speaking, one came out today. And, you know, on some level, I'll tell you honestly, I find music videos to be a bit odd still. I've never, like,
sure.
people pretending to sing a song. What the hell? But you clearly, you know, in every live clip I've seen, like, you love it. And I just want to, for what it's worth, I can feel that passion you have for music.
I'll tell you that for the music video tip, it wasn't always that way, loving. Like, the first video we did, I just felt so humiliated doing it for, like, the reasons you list, which is go on lip sync screaming in front of a room of people holding microphones who, like, are thinking about their next smoke break.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
like, it took some time just to be, like, gain the confidence to, and also the truly, I mean, once you hit 40, no one is looking at you as a new thing ever,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
which offers freedom. Like, I'm not bound by having to be the new thing and wonder what people will think and concerned with, will I make it? Like, we've already made it once we, you know, put out a 7-inch in 1998, yeah. you know, with our first band, and the rest has just been like a glorious victory lap, you know, with highlights throughout. So
yeah. nice.
But yeah, doing a video, you have to lose a little shame, a little personal, you know, integrity just by not, you know, just and by having fun and being, you know, getting loose. I don't know. It took us all a little time to get there.
Well, I will say I enjoyed the video for Moving On. It's cool.
Cool.
It's a nice one. And I don't quite understand the concept, but it's good.
I'll tell you what the main concept of it was. We don't really tour much and people might like us in different places. What if they just got to see what we looked like?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like, and also I feel like there's lots of bands doing visuals where it's like, here's a blurry collection of like interesting distorted video effects. We're like, let's just show you what we look like.
Yeah.
What our legs look like, what our midsections look like, how we hold our instruments, yeah. and you can look at it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very effective. It's a great song. I love this album. Matt, I want to congratulate you on it. I'm glad Piss Jeans are back, so to speak.
Yeah, thank you so much.
No, it's my pleasure. I want to ask you about future plans, which it might include any current writing you guys are doing or you're doing at the moment. I know the record's just about to come out and people are still going to process that. But, you know, the way it works, you make a record, you finish it. It could be a year. And then in that year, you might be working
on it. It's going to be more than a year.
How are you working it?
Our tanks are empty, but
yeah.
I can also say that, you know, as long as we're in physical health,
yeah.
we will definitely do another album as soon as we can.
Okay,
you
great.
Know?
Great.
It's like, to me, like, I like playing shows a lot, but writing new songs with these guys and, like, putting something together, and it just is, it's so much fun. Like,
yeah.
that's the best part of being in a band. And I can't wait to get down to playing new songs that we're writing together that no one hears for a few years, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. There's a specialness about the practice space that maybe...
Yeah, it's just like if you feel like you're creating something and then it exists now and it didn't the day before, like, that's so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. All right, well, that's cool. So you got some tour dates and people... Oh, yeah, so that's my next question. Where can people go on the internet, the dreaded internet, using their telephones and computers? Where can they go to keep up with Piss Jeans, your tour dates, any other news?
I feel like, well, like, Instagram's probably the most easily updatable.
Yeah.
You know, like, we have a website with all of our shows that I, like, manually type in the HTML myself. Just because I've kept a log of every show we've played as of, like, our fifth show, maybe.
Oh, nice.
Ongoing.
Nice.
And it's just fun to, like, I mean, our memories are shot, so we can be like, didn't we play with Fucked Up in New York? Like, when was that? And I can just, like, look it up, you know?
Oh, great. Yeah, that's great.
But yeah, Instagram, Real Piss Jeans, is like, that's where we're most promote-y and, you know, sharing content. We probably have a Facebook and Twitter, but, you know, come on. Who's using that at this point?
Okay, I'll link to all the things I can find based on what you just said, and people can click on those as well.
That'd be great.
Yeah, no problem. If we can go out on a song from this great new record, I wonder if you can pick one for us and also say why it came to mind.
Ooh, okay. Well, why don't we give people the most bang for their buck and go with Junk Time then, the longest song that kind of encapsulates a bunch of what we were talking about, and also is a little bit of an outlier in that the lyrics might be a little less clearly succinct, you know, on a specific one topic that I'm hammering home. It just felt really fun to write. And I feel like there's a great long instrumental part that I can just like sit back and enjoy myself too. So
yeah.
That seems like a fun one to share.
No, I agree. Let's go out on it right now. This is Junk Time by Piss Jeans from their wonderful new record, Half Divorced, which is available around the world via Sub Pop Records. Matt, pleasure to get to speak to you once again. I thank you for this time. I hope you enjoyed yourself, and I hope we talk again soon. Best of luck in the future.
It was a great time. Thanks so much, Vish.
Did you hear about the butane tank explosion last night? More compressed gas than my wildest dreams, up in a flash. The workers' arms look like an old leather jacket. It's a pretty cute thing to call an infectious cancer rash. My neighbor claimed that he could taste the weather as the flames floated over my block like Santa Claus. I only found all this out a few days later. When it happened, I just thought my screen was on pause. A brand new savior arrived right at sundown. You can even sync it with your portable device. Oh, but there must have been an error with the order. Turns out it was a totally different Christ. While the celebration slowly turned to torture, and now I hear they keep his soggy brain on ice. But I only found out a while later. See, I was on my junk time. Just on my junk time.
It's very nice to reconnect with Matt from Piss Jeans. What a thoughtful and lovely guy. And in this case, Matt appeared on the 844th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available just about wherever it is you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you have heard about and it's just nowhere in your pod feeds, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. Like Creative Control on various, and follow it, I guess, on various social media things. I have a link tree that it says follow Vish online. So if you want to follow me on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or Threads or Blue Sky or the YouTube channel or the Patreon page, whatever it is, there's a link tree link there. So click on that, please, and follow me. And who knows, maybe I'll follow you or like your stuff or something. Most importantly, do please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to support me and my work. This is the primary source of income in my life right now, so I'm really hoping to have a sustainable life doing this show the best I can. There are different tiers that get you different things, access to different things. Starting at the $4 a month American tier, you get episodes earlier than everybody else, and they're completely ad-free. And then as you move up the tiers, lots of other things. $6, you get bonus content. You know, $6 a month. In fact, I alluded to the old Piss Jeans interview I did with Matt, I don't know, some 10 years ago maybe. I might see if I can track that down and see what it sounds like. And if it's good, maybe I'll put that up. Anyway, stuff like that. And then as you go $10 a month, by the way, you enter our prize pack draw thing. Every month I'm trying to give away prize packs from very generous labels like Constellation Records, Merge Records, Drag City, You've Changed. All of them have come through and offered nice prize packs. And Mark Masters provided a nice prize pack. We were giving away copies of his book. Anyway, the $10 a month tier, you get access to that draw. All this to say, I could use your support. And if you like this show and want to support independent journalism like mine, if this is journalism, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. Thank you so much. Also want to thank Blackbird Music, who support this show. You can learn more about them at blackbird.ca and order records there and all that kind of stuff. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to Jim Guthrie. He lends me music for this show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Matt from Piss Jeans. Check out that album, Half Divorce. It's great. And please subscribe to this podcast or follow it and tell your friends all about it. And I will talk to you very soon. I love you? No, that's too much. Oh, let me just say bye for now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.